speak to Dr. Colm Henry. He's the HSE's Chief Clinical Officer. Dr. Henry, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
The figures released from the Health Protection Surveillance Centre to the Irish Times showing that of the 232,164 confirmed cases of COVID up to March the 24th of this year, just 262 are linked to outdoor transmission. That's one in every 1,000. How much safer are we from catching COVID outside?
Well, Gavin, we've always known that transmission is much lower in outdoor settings, but this data is misleading in terms of the number because it pertains to outbreaks in outdoor settings. It doesn't really include all the other scenarios where people might acquire COVID when they congregate in any activity associated. For example, our directors of public health will tell us that located outbreaks from changing rooms, from travel to and from matches, from dugouts. So it doesn't include all the activities which are associated with outdoor activities. It's just those that are recorded related purely to outbreaks alone. But what the message does get across from this data is that in the purest sense, where people adhere to social distancing and all the other public health measures, we know that outside transmission is 19, 20 times less likely than an indoor setting.
Can I just hear that? 19 to 20 times as opposed to 1,000 times? That's a big difference.
In terms of the relative degree of safety of transmissibility, outdoor settings much safer certainly than indoor settings. Hence, as we begin to ease social restrictions in the coming weeks to months, we'll be putting the emphasis on, in view of the benefits of people's health and well-being, is in resuming outdoor activities and certainly not indoor activities until we get levels of community transmission down to lower levels.
I look around at people meeting up outside in recent weeks in parks and playgrounds, children playing together in streets up and down the country. Many people are way ahead of the guidelines on meeting outside. Don't these figures suggest that they're right?
Well, as I said, we know transmission of the virus is for the large part associated with indoor, congregated, poorly ventilated settings. That doesn't mean it's exclusively so, and it doesn't account for all the associated activities that happen with all outdoor settings. As I said, with sporting activities, for example, not often the sport per se that leads to transmission. It's the travel to and fro, the socialising that's associated with it. And similarly with schools, we know schools are relatively low risk for transmission, but the activities associated with schooling sometimes have led to outbreaks and sometimes have led to amplification events, as our public health experts call it.
Will guidelines be updated to reflect this data on meeting up outside, on playing sport, on outdoor hospitality?
I think our guidance is quite clear in that there's a whole menu of behaviours and of restrictions and of advice to give to people that reduce transmission of the virus. And we know, as I said before, that indoor, congregated, poorly ventilated settings really foster transmission of the virus very easily. Outdoor settings less so. This has always been part of our advice. But those other elements of advice, the social distancing, the minimising of contacts, the basic measures of hand washing, and so on, they're not going to change. We know that's how the virus transmits.
But can people be more reassured when, for example, they pass by children in a playground together, people meeting in a park together, perhaps busy settings in outdoor places at weekend, that it's, judging from these figures, perhaps not as concerning as they would have thought originally?
Absolutely. We've always known, and we're learning as we learn more and more about the transmission of this virus, is that it is predominantly that of an indoor setting, but not exclusively so. And that's why there's a need to observe all those other social restriction measures as much as we can, even as we begin to ease these restrictions and facilitate greater amount of outdoor activities, which is to all our benefit, given the length of this level 5 restrictions.
But you don't envisage any speeding up of easing of restrictions outdoors, knowing what we know now?
Ultimately, it's up to government. They will translate the public health advice. Public health advice, and this is quite clear.
You're a member of NPHET, isn't that right?
Yes. So outdoor activities certainly safer, but that our public health directors will tell us that there are situations associated with outdoor activities where people can congregate together and which allow for transmission of the virus. So it's not a pure argument in a sense, but it's a sense that we can't drop our guard at any time, be it a healthcare setting, be it a school, be it a football pitch, be it a construction setting. The virus is agnostic to any of these settings and will take any opportunity it can to transmit.
We'll be talking about the recruitment of vaccinators shortly, given that the plan and the national vaccination programme is to vaccinate, or at least to give out around a million doses a month this month, next month and in June. And that will depend on having enough people available to give out those vaccines. How many people have been recruited to vaccinate so far?
Well, we've had over 4,000 applications, 650 people now. We deployed people and those recruiters, and we expect to recruit many more as we open up our mass vaccination centres. And these, of the 37 or so centres, Gavin, we've opened 16 or 17 at this stage, and they're predominantly doing the over 70s and also those Category 4 patients. As we move into the next categories, they're larger volume people, particularly as we get into age groups, and that will, supply dependent, allow us to open up more mass vaccination centres and do people at greater volume as the supplies ramp up during the summer months. So we will recruit, we are recruiting, and we will recruit as the supplies increase in order to get, as we always have said, to give those supplies out within as quickly as we can as they arrive on the shores.
How many will you need to be able to do 250,000 vaccines a week?
Well, we estimate at least 2,500, 3,000. We have redeployed staff within our own healthcare system. We have many people who have applied to come back, including retired staff. And we have, of course, people who have applied through this to be dedicated vaccinators. So we're confident, based on the planning we have for these 37 centres, that the only restriction for us will be the supplies coming into this country, and that will be the only impediment to us reaching 250,000 per week, which we're confident we'll achieve during the summer months.
We'll also be hearing later in the programme from teachers' unions who, as we've been hearing and as we've heard, are unhappy with what they say are broken promises to them on being prioritised for vaccines. And they're not the only working group who have made this claim. How much quicker will they be vaccinated as a result of the change of plan than they would have been?
Well, I understand people's disappointment. This list from NIAC has always been agile and made that clear from the beginning. And the overwhelming evidence now is that the serious illness, hospitalisation, and, of course, death is closely linked to age. And that is much, much greater at risk than any other differential between professions, with the exception of healthcare workers. So the fact is, a teacher who's in their 50s is at much greater risk of serious illness than a teacher who's in their 20s. And this reframing, or this new allocation list, which NIAC have advised and government have accepted, will allow us to get to those teachers who are at much greater risk of serious illness than those more quickly than those teachers who are at much less risk.
Dr. Colm Henry, Chief Clinical Officer with the HSE, thank you for speaking to us. Let's talk now to Dr. Mary Favier. She's a Cork-based GP, COVID-19 advisor to the Irish College of General Practitioners and a member of the National Public Health Emergency Team. Dr. Favier, good afternoon to you again.
Good afternoon.
The National Vaccination Programme, as we've been talking about, is set to reach a million doses given to people this week, and the aim is to do a million a month over the next 3 months. Who's going to do that?
General practitioners have been substantially vaccinating over the last 4 to 6 weeks, and we're about three quarters of the way through the over 70s age groups. Many of those have now had their second doses, and we'll complete the first doses largely next week and the week after, and then into the beginning, to the end of April and beginning of May. General practice is now increasingly being asked to vaccinate into the next groups, which are those who are very high risk and high risk. And that's because general practice is ideally placed to deliver vaccines. We have 3,500 GPs who have all been vaccinating in the last number of weeks, many of them over this weekend. And we're well placed to assist there. It's a very big challenge in general practice because we are so busy otherwise. And we have our over 70s vaccination going on, but it will be general practices there ready to help as best we can.
Are you concerned about the recruitment of vaccinators?
It's been a significant challenge, the recruitment of vaccinators, I understand, for many reasons. We know many GPs who have been retired and many other doctors have volunteered to come back to assist with vaccination. I've met all types of obstacles, like things being asked for their leaving certs. We know practice nurses have actually tried to volunteer as vaccinators, fully trained, delivering COVID vaccines in their own practices, and been told that they're not HSE staff members and that they, are not in a position even to volunteer as vaccinated. So there are some challenges that needs great agility, it needs great flexibility. this needs to be a national effort. It needs to be everybody putting aside all rigid structures and saying we're all here to do our best. And that's what's happening in the HSE, and you know, and that will improve in the interim. General practice has this agility because we always deliver vaccines anyway. And no, not necessarily every GP will take part in this because some of them are literally just too busy, but we would expect a majority would. But we would also ask the public to be patient over the next number of weeks while we do this, because inevitably it's going to displace some non-COVID care. So inevitably people will find that ringing their GP will take longer, getting appointments will take longer. So we'd ask them to be patient because it's a very important national effort.
Do you believe that those challenges that you outline, recruiting vaccinators, could slow down the national vaccination programme?
I think it's inevitable that it could if they're not addressed. I think it's really important that flexibility and agility is applied, and that anybody who wants to vaccinate, who's appropriately qualified, anybody who wants to make a contribution to what is a really important time over the next 4 weeks to 8 weeks, should be facilitated, if at all possible, to do that. And we'll be really aware in general practice that we will make our contribution and really try to assist that. But yes, it's an important that old rules or potentially inflexible ways of doing things are facilitated to change.
We were talking to Dr. Colm Henry just before you there about that data showing that only 1 in 1,000 cases of COVID here were transmitted outdoors. How reassuring do you believe this is for people when they or their children are outside?
I think it's very reassuring. It's a good news story. It's part of what we knew already, though. But I think the important thing is that people don't reduce their guard, because the it's the bits around it. It's the things you touch, the water bottles you share, that how you travel to the outside parks before you do something, whether you need to go into closed environments like the toilets. It's the gatherings that might occur before children run out, you know, to kick a ball around. They're the types of things we need to be constantly vigilant of. But I think it goes to the fact that this is going to be the new way of living. And I think in Ireland, we haven't always embraced our mild climate, more focused on the bad weather. And they're the things we need to really look at positively to say, yes, it is so much safer outdoors that we can do things in parallel rather than in enclosed environments. And it's good news.
We'll hear from teachers next. What would you say to teachers who are concerned that it will take them longer to get their vaccine now?
I think realistically teachers were never going to receive the vaccine before the end of the school year, particularly for secondary school teachers. So for some of the younger teachers, they will receive the vaccine later. For many of the older teachers, they'll receive it a year earlier because of the age cohorts. And I think for most teachers I've spoken to about this, they're really well aware that if you're in the older age groups of 55 through 64, you are 70 times more likely to die of COVID than if you're 20 to 35. You're 20 times more likely to end up in ICU and even 5 times more likely to end up in hospital. So for many younger teachers and others, they're aware that they would not want to step in front of somebody in those age groups who would benefit more greatly from COVID vaccination. So I think it's highly probable they will largely be vaccinated across the summer and be fit and fully immune to go back to the school year in September.
Dr. Mary Favier, thank you very much for speaking to us again today.